For November the 10th, 2017, we talk about Super Mario Odyssey, Sony's weird trophy reward program, and we ask you which games pull you into a time hole. Welcome to Level 219. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, an incredibly spooky podcast from beyond the...
November.
Wait, no, I'm just looking at you. Oh, fuck, we missed that episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
We're so spooky, we jumped forward in time.
Here we are, podcasting from the past. I mean, I'm just making a joke because we skipped last week and that. And scene. Hi, everybody. This is a podcast for people who love video games. Sorry, I forgot to say the needful there. Yeah, sorry we missed last week, but it was worthwhile to have some time for Halloween.
But sorry, I ended up streaming, so listeners got to hang out with me anyway. So yeah,
neat.
That was a thing that happened. Woo!
Yeah, and you're going to talk about that. You were streaming Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
And of all the games to turn into a possible like Danganronpa kind of thing, where Jella gets mad at Cole, I didn't expect one of my favorite games of this year to do that.
We're going to have a discussion. It'll be fun.
Turning the volume on my headphones down now.
So stay tuned, everybody,
for the intervention.
So how is everybody doing? Any cool things happen over the past 2 weeks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I did my Spartan Beast and I got my Spartan Trifecta.
Woo. Yes.
Ooh.
That's a thing that happened. And it was fucking cold. It was cold. Like, it never gets cold, but it was like 28 degrees and windy. And then we had to go through water. And then we had to totally get submerged under the dunk wall. And that is what sapped all of my energy. It was like 14.25 miles on trails with hills and shit and obstacles and lots and lots and lots of water. It became a running gag where, like, I was going with my two friends that we were doing the trifecta together.
Uh-huh.
So my teammates. And I was like, well, look, guys, it's only like 3 miles left. I can see the cars. I can hear the announcer. There can't be any more water. Fuck my life. I go over a ridge and there's like half a mile of like a lake we have to cross. I'm like, of course. Of course there's a lake.
So a dunk wall, like this appears on the video that I'm watching. It's the first result on Google and YouTube. Appears to be a wall that is in the middle of like a trench full of water.
Yeah, and you have to go underneath the water to go under the wall. And it's after several mud hills where the valleys are filled with water.
Right.
And that's okay. Like, it getting wet in cold weather up to like part, you know, like half of your body where you still got some dry area is okay.
Right.
Like, you can deal with that. You can't feel anything from the waist down, but like, you know, you warm up. But like, man, that dunk wall killed me. And I was like, okay, well, because Texas right now it is like 85 degrees and with the heat, you know, with the humidity, the heat index is like 90. So we're not really accustomed. This is like November. We're not really accustomed to having it be very cold. So like when it was windy and cold and 20 something degrees, I was like, and then we're in water. I'm like, okay. So I am better prepared for next time. I did not completely, like, I wasn't out there in like shorts or anything. I was definitely in like, you know, cold gear and I had layers and stuff, but like I have a better idea of what I want to get for the next time just in case it turns freezing cold out of nowhere. So
exactly to have a
there was frost on the ground and I'm like, frost on the ground in Texas, really? Like, for this? When I have to go in water, you assholes. Damn you. I was so mad, but anyway, that's the thing.
So, Jala, what does it mean that you have the trifecta? I mean, obviously, I know you've done three of them so far, but is that like a particular accomplishment? Like, what's next?
A trifecta is when you run a sprint, a super, and a beast, which are of different lengths. and you run one each of those during one calendar year, and then that is a trifecta. There are different awards. Like, you can get a regular trifecta. Ta-da, I've got one. Mm-hmm. You can do multiple trifectas in the same year to get a bigger medal that's just like, dude, check it out. Like, I'm so hardcore, I do a lot of these. Uh-huh. And then, like, the one I'm shooting for next year, I don't know if I'll get it or not because it's very tough, the endurance trifecta, where you do a hurricane heat, which I'll explain in a second, hurricane heat 12-hour, and then an ultra beast, which is double what I did this last weekend. It's literally like when I did 14.25, they did 28.5.
Jesus.
They basically did two laps.
Yeah.
And they started earlier when it was colder. So the hurricane heat is basically run by the race coordinators of Spartan. And they take you maybe on the course, maybe not on the course. And it's kind of like basically military training, because they just like you are going with a ruck. You are hiking wherever they want you to do. You do whatever they're telling you to do. And you don't know what it's going to be going into it.
Right. So you can't, like prepare for exactly what variety of human excite bike they're going to make you play.
Yeah, basically. Like the one that I was supposed to run. Now, I was supposed to run the beast and do a hurricane heat. But one of my teammates ended up spraining her ankle during the race. And so it slowed us down enough that I only had like 30 minutes after the end of the first race to go get my shirt, get my picture, eat something, change, get all my gear, and figure out where the hell I was supposed to go for the other race. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to make it in time. And if you're late, they won't take you. So I'm not going to worry about it. I'll next year, you know. Yeah. But like that one, the first thing you were supposed to do is do like log hopping from log to log to log at the site wherever the flag was, and then from there I saw them marching when I was done with everything somewhere. I don't know where they were going to, but that one was like 5 or 6 hours. So jeez. That'll be fun.
Nice.
Cool. Like my beast, it ended up taking us like 6.5 hours because my friend with the ankle, you know, problem. So mm-hmm. I met a guy out there who was 74 who had a quadruple bypass and he was doing it.
Wow. That's awesome.
There are people of all shapes and sizes and fitness levels that do these things. It is really just not, it is not as exclusive as a lot of people seem to conceive mm-hmm. of it. So it's actually really fun and really cool.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's cool to hear about. Happy you accomplished that. Any more races this year, or is it getting like too cold?
Oh, okay. No. When it's cold, that's like the best time to run, because that way you don't get like, in the heat you get cramps a lot of times. I've never gotten a cramp in a race, thank God. But that's a thing that happens.
Just hypothermia.
Just hypothermia in the middle of fucking whatever. Anyway, I am doing a turkey trot on Thanksgiving, just because my running group is doing it and usually does it like a big turnout because it's, you know, in our hood. And then the other race I'm going to be doing is a full trail marathon with Trail Racing Over Texas, which does a bunch of like trail races and ultra marathons throughout Texas. So
trot.
Trot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Dennis, I heard you say that you had a cool Halloween.
Yeah, it was great. So I can't remember if I mentioned on air before, but we went as Jurassic Park for Halloween.
Okay.
So Jen and I are the paleontologists from the first movie, and the kids dressed up as dinosaurs, and we put a giant electric fence around the stroller, complete with like the authentic sign that's on in the movie. And I brought Bluetooth speakers, and we were just blaring the Jurassic Park theme the entire. Exactly. Yep.
Nice.
So, it was a blast. We probably made it, three or so blocks before, and the kids didn't like melt down or anything. It was just, you know, everyone was done.
It's time.
Which was very manageable, you know? Yeah, we got a good amount of candy out of it, met a bunch of neighbors. That was fun. Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing that happened this week is we were driving back from seeing some friends over the weekend through a thunderstorm, and our van got hit by lightning.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems to be fine. Like, it got hit. It was a, you know, brilliant light flash accompanied immediately, you know, at the same time with a giant boom. From what I saw, it was like right in front of us. So maybe it could have like struck right next to us, but money says it hit the van.
Okay.
And all of the electronics in the van immediately dropped off and restarted.
Okay.
And it was telling me, it couldn't detect anything. It kept on running just fine. And then we stopped it and turned it back on. Everything came back up just fine. But yeah, interesting experience. So who knew? They design vans to be able to get hit by lightning and keep on going, I guess.
Yeah, there must be, the ground must not be inside the car. So I'm very happy you guys ended that, that this wasn't a disaster for you and your family. That's very eerie. Did you go and buy a lottery ticket?
I know. Should have. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the odds of getting hit by lightning while you're in a car are versus getting hit by lightning, period.
Yeah. There's that myth that if lightning hits your car, you're safe because of the rubber tires, which doesn't make a goddamn lick of sense. But
glad you survived, bud.
It goes to the frame. So yeah, that's a little dose of excitement there. I'm checking periodically for superpowers. Nothing yet.
Yeah, if the stories are true, it's going to manifest in your kids.
Yeah. Well, that would explain why Luke was floating above his bed tonight.
Yeah.
That or possession. We're never quite sure. And at three, it's always hard to tell.
Yeah. It's a real blurry line when they're that young. So
yeah, eventful couple weeks.
It sounds like it. Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, Ben, I want to give you a chance because everybody else had one. We haven't talked in a while.
I went out of town 2 weeks ago, got to visit some friends in Seattle, and then I got to do something that I'll talk about in the grind. So,
fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I don't really have a story. It's just been a bunch of the usual work stuff. So why don't we get on with the work stuff? Why don't we do the usual kind of show? We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see, Jala, what's happening with the Switch?
The video games are around us, all around us.
Yes.
Are they surrounding us?
Oh no. Okay, I've got my gaming PC to my left. I've got my R-Zone in front of me to my right, and my living room.
Actually, honestly, it is true in my room too, because I've got my computer in front of me. Behind me are my consoles, over that way are my games, mm-hmm. and my other consoles that aren't plugged in. So yeah, legit is true. They're coming for me. All right, so consoles, on that note, console sales are up 27% from last year to $1.9 billion. The peak for console sales was in 2008 with $3.2 billion. Mm-hmm. But this current increase in sales here could indicate the beginning of a comeback. So the PS4 is still selling strong, 4.2 million sold last quarter, with earnings up 376%. Total sales have been 67.5 million PS4s since launch, outpacing the PS3 sales, so that's cool. Nintendo ratcheted up its sales expectations from 10 million to 14 million by March of 2018. And I know if I catch a break long enough, I'll be getting one at some point, mm-hmm. but that's, caveat is that shit has to stop happening.
Right. Or at least at a slower clip.
Yeah, so I can maybe breathe. So Xbox One X is hitting stores the day that we're recording today. So Microsoft says it's the most powerful console ever made, although console folk, I'm sure, are going to tear into that. Whatever.
Marketing.
Whatever. I don't give a shit, Xbox. The Xbox One sales dropped 48% last quarter because of the Xbox One X release, but mm-hmm. the subscriptions to Xbox Live went up by 21%, and Twitch is, of course, growing. There's also a comment in the article about smartphones having about 2 billion players, but companies are figuring out now. They used to freak out that mobile gaming was going to take over and eradicate console gaming, but then they have realized that no, console games are to what YouTube videos are to television series and major motion pictures. Console games are just more immersive.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, there's also like different contexts. Like, you do have a limited amount of time, but you know, you play different games in different places.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
if you're the Switch, you just are mobile gaming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the whole gist of the article that I was pulling up is basically consoles are starting to see a resurgence. And yeah, I can admit to that. At least for me, the Switch would be something that I would do. I would probably like never bother to hook it up to my TV because of, you know, aforementioned long ago discussion about my TV setup and why it's not comfortable for me. Also, I like to lay down in my bed when I'm not running and doing crazy things.
Right. Yeah.
So I like to sit in my bed and stretch out and give my legs a rest and then, you know, play a game there. So that's why I really want to switch if I could get one.
Yeah.
So I would actually buy a console of some sort. Yes, a mobile one, but still a console, damn it. So I haven't really been into consoles for a while. So that's kind of, you know.
The Switch has made a tremendous case for itself in its first year. Imagine how much different these numbers would be if Nintendo decided to make more than 5 of them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And Xbox is, you know, that Microsoft is at the tail end of that and not really doing quite so well as Nintendo, which is not doing nearly as well as Sony. So
yeah,
there's a big, you know, like a stronger and stronger Sony, you know, thing. I guess people just have more faith in that company's console, you know.
Yeah.
At this juncture,
they just did something good those first couple of years, and then Microsoft wasn't able to catch back up.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, the other day I was playing The Witcher, and I was like, yeah, I like my PS4 an awful lot. And I thought, okay, this came out in 2013. Uh-oh, we're probably coming up on a time when, like, we're going to be like late console, and all of a sudden new hardware is going to come out. I don't want that to happen yet. Like,
yeah.
Why? Don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the console no one asked for.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I feel like, do you think when the PlayStation 4 was announced, there was a general like feeling that the PlayStation 3 was getting too old?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think. It's hard to put yourself back in those shoes, like trying to gauge out like how much traditionally you felt like you needed a new console when you get it announced.
It also felt like it took a little while for the PS4 to make its case too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I seem to remember listening to you guys talking about it, because, you know, like I haven't bought like an actual brand new console in a long time. I bought a Vita somewhere in there, but that's like, that was used and that's an old system, you know, like
right.
that's kind of retro gaming at this point. But you guys were talking about it before the PS4 released, and you were like, well, I want to get one because Sony. And then it's like, but you know, the PS3 is pretty good. I mean, like, unless the graphics are so much better, I mean, like, what is it going to offer me that's going to be, you know, greater than what I've already got, or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what the attitude was before it came out. But now, you know, I think it's kind of like a given that you will get one if you are already on, you know, using your PS3, you know, you're going to get a PS4 as soon as you can. So
I feel like it's always a game that makes the sale for a new console. Like, because I remember with the Switch I was just getting PS3 games when it was on both systems, when they were both out. And
yeah,
I was
that's
happy
how you played
that.
Like Destiny. Is that how you played Shadow of Mordor?
I think that's one of the games that I first switched over to PS4 on, because I'm not sure if that was on both consoles or not.
It was on both, but the PS4, the PS3 version had didn't have the
Nemesis
system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first one I remember you talking about anyway that was actually a PS4 game, but I don't know.
So. Man, I remember a day when it was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get this because Watch Dogs is a launch title.
Whoops. So innocent.
Whoopsie.
So young.
Yeah. But then I canceled that pre-order and I just waited until Dragon Age Inquisition came out. A lot of big mistakes there.
Well, that is usually why I don't really pre-order damn thing. Yeah. But I'm just like, I'll just wait and see and, you know, get it whenever. Like, I knew I wanted a Switch and I would have pre-ordered one if I had the money.
Yeah.
And I would buy one now if I had the money. And, you know, it's that kind of situation. So I'll get it as soon as I can, but it's not right this second. And that's fine. That just means that there will be more games out there for me to pick from and then have a lot of backlog. And, you know, then I can have another system with backlog because I don't have enough of that.
Yep. Well, it's cool. It's good to hear that these gigantic companies are making more money.
Well, that just means that there's, you know.
I know.
There's.
It means the industry is healthy.
To make more money.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like the way you said it better than the way I said it.
Yes. Just doing that.
speaking of publishers and money and success, Telltale seems to be having problems.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this
tell
is...
Tell the tale, Cole.
I will tell the tale of Telltale. Behold a tale of woe. Yeah, this is related to Telltale, the people who do those narrative episodic games. They recently laid off 90 of their employees, which amounted to 25% of its workforce, saying to Games Industry International, their CEO said, "Our industry has shifted in a tremendous way over the past few years. The realities of the environment we face moving forward demand we evolve as well, reorienting our organization with a focus on delivering fewer, better games with a smaller team." Yeah, so this is kind of a big deal because if you'll recall, you know, especially after the success of The Walking Dead, Telltale kind of seemed to be everywhere in every single kind of license.
Yep.
You know, like there was a marked kind of departure for them away from the classic adventure game toward these more cinematic things that used licenses people like. Or have a lot of affection for. And I mean, the problem that I saw was that nobody really seemed to be that excited about the individual games themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, another one? Damn, Telltale made another. Damn.
Pump
I didn't even
bricks.
Hear about this one. You know, right.
Yeah. You know, like, and they, you know, some big hitters there. They had Game of Thrones, and I'd never heard anybody talk about that. Like Minecraft Adventure Mode had a lot of kind of like star power behind it, but I never really heard that much about people really getting into it. It's very, I mean, it's not strange. It's just like, wow, they kind of bet the farm on that, didn't they?
Well, and I wonder how much, like, you know, Game of Thrones isn't hurting for a game. So Telltale has to be shelling out for the rights to do Game of Thrones.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much they threw down being like, well, we struck gold with The Walking Dead. It's got to work on other formats. And you do
same
that, you
Batman.
Do Batman, you do, I mean, yeah, like every major franchise under the sun, it felt like they were, I assume they were, you know, buying up and clearly it's not working out.
Yeah. Well, that sucks, for those people who were laid off, who knows? I don't even know what's coming down the pike for them as a studio.
So I have their Wikipedia page open. They have Walking Dead, the final season, coming out next year. Wolf Among Us season 2 coming out next year. And Game of Thrones season 2 coming out to be determined.
Mm. So. Okay. Well, best of luck to them. I don't really have anything else to say on top of that. I've got like bundles and bundles of Telltale games. And I, you know, that's like every other bundle.
Apparently they have a Guardians of the Galaxy game that came out this year. I had not heard of
what?
That either.
Yeah, see, like I said, I mean, just what? What the fuck? When did that happen? I don't remember that.
Yeah, their Orange is the New Black game was on point, though.
I could fucking believe it. You know?
Yeah. Weird. Very weird.
Legit, though, I would probably play Stranger Things Telltale game.
Yeah, I probably would, too. Yeah,
I think that's what it is everyone has that niche where it's like, oh shit, that's a Telltale game. I'm getting that. Mm-hmm. But there aren't enough people that are going to buy more games out of that niche.
Well, here's what's crazy about it. Like, I didn't have any affection for The Walking Dead as a franchise I got the game because I heard it was a really good game.
Yep.
You know,
and that is actually like where I stood on it too. Like, I don't have any affection for Walking Dead, generally speaking. Like, I've never seen the show. I've only read just a tad bit of the comics, and so I'm like, eh. But then everybody was ranting and raving about how great it was, and I was like, okay. And I played it, and unlike other things that people rant and rave about, it is one of those games that I actually really did dig. So, yeah. You know, like, I did like it, and I moved on. And I think I actually liked Walking Dead Season 2 better than, like, any of you guys.
Yeah. So, I never finished Walking Dead Season 2.
That's sad. But I'm going to definitely get the third one when that comes out. Yeah. So,
Jala, I didn't know I was in a personal popularity competition with Walking Dead Season 2. You have to tell me what it's doing that makes you like it so much better than me. The way you phrase that made it
sound. Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. Okay. I got it.
We should move on here. Ben, what's PlayStation doing with this trophy stuff? Because it seems hinky to me.
It seems a little weird. So the pitch, here's the Sony pitch, is, hey, kids, you want to play games and make money? Now you can. They're monetizing the trophies you get in games, which kind of sounds like a bad idea because it means that people are going to start buying like King Kong type games again.
Yeah.
But so what they're doing, and this is, should preface this with, they're doing this only for Sony Rewards, people in the Sony Rewards program, which I had not heard about before this article. And so I looked it up and it kind of just seems like a hokey rewards program. I don't know. I'm always very skeptical of rewards programs, so I don't really like that, but, that's me. But what they're doing is, if you have a rewards program and if you've signed up for this thing, the way it works is every time you collect a trophy, you will get a certain amount of points that you can redeem on the PlayStation Store for actual money to buy actual things virtual things on the PlayStation Store. And so the way it breaks down is, a silver trophy is worth a penny, a gold trophy is worth 10 cents, and a platinum trophy, which is getting all the trophies for a game, is worth $1. But you can only turn them in groups of certain numbers. So you need 100 silver trophies, 25 gold trophies, or 10 platinum trophies in order to redeem whatever it is. That's it.
So it's like Camel Cash, except you have to mail in the butts to prove that you smoked them.
yeah. Exactly. I don't know. Like, I think it's... I don't think it's a terrible idea. I mean, I think it's interesting to try and like incentivize people playing games and getting trophies. I mean, there's a lot of like asterisks on that though, like provided that, you know, people are like making things worthwhile and associating those with trophies when you play it, and not just like, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of bad places it could go as well, where people are just playing games without enjoying them.
This changes the way that I make trophies, because what this really is fans will be mad at me if I, you know, allow there to be a trophy that's really hard to get.
Possibly, yeah.
Like, my mentality is immediately, well, great, like, developers, you either hate me or you're helping me out here, get a $10 refund on my game, or, you know, rebate on my game.
Yeah, or you can do something like heinous, like have something that's like only achievable through a lot of hard work in a game, or if you pay like 50 cents, you can get all the trophies or something like that.
Right,
like,
yeah. One of the trophies is like, do microtransactions with us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it seems like it can go a lot of sketchy places, and it's gated behind the like Sony Rewards program, so
yeah.
I don't think this will be a big thing, but...
The Sony Rewards program also offers discount codes or points for things like signing up for trial programs, four in all, subscribing to PlayStation Network services, or buying and renting movies.
Yeah.
Get paid for
sure
lovely
ads. Signed up at some point. I guarantee you I'm signed up for this and have no idea how many points I have.
We should also bring up that Sony does not sponsor the podcast. This is not a pitch for them.
No.
I do not endorse this.
God, I hope that what I just said didn't sound like I was pitching for that service. Yeah. No, I don't care for this one bit. But I also think that Steam trading cards are a terrible idea. Like,
yeah.
It just.
I think it's interesting as a case of like people trying to monetize playing games to the player.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I don't know, playing the game is plenty rewarding for me.
It should be.
Yeah. There's somebody out there for whom that statement that I just made sounds like I'm like a cranky old grandpa who's like, clothes dryer, we got the sun. Like, yeah.
I sometimes feel that way too.
Yeah.
All these microtransactions in games now.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
Loot boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Guys, I have 0 points, though I did sign up before.
Wait, currently 1,000 points in the Sony Rewards program gets a user a $10 discount voucher on PlayStation Network. So it seems like primarily what this is for is to earn free PlayStation Plus time.
Yeah, I could do it.
Yeah. Weird. Well, hopefully this doesn't backfire on them.
Yeah.
Dennis, round us out with this story from Ingress.
Yeah, in terms of skeezy programs, we're really hitting all the high marks. So you guys might be familiar with a game called Ingress. It's made by Niantic, who also does Pokemon Go, and has much the same mentality in that you play it in the real world by going to physical locations, taking over nodes, and there's kind of two sides that are struggling for control of these nodes across the globe. Well, you know, great idea, really cool concept, but it's starting to get creepy because there is a third-party tool called Riot, not to be confused with the developer, that allows people to track other players' movements fairly easily. So it'll kind of, you type in a player's name and it tells you what nodes they're checking into and when. And it's starting to get creepy. So like one person playing like literally found a note on their doorstep warning her to like back off.
No.
Another person, found the board for this Riot program and saw someone bragging about how they found out she was taking a vacation to Costa Rica and paid someone to sabotage the nodes that she took in Costa Rica. Like getting kind of personal.
Jesus.
It's crazy. So the interesting thing here is like, that's the fantasy of this game though, right? Is you're in this like covert information war.
Yeah, it's all about like a conspiracy theory, information technology kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, but so where is, you know, it's like the people who did the Nerf zombies games in college and high school. Do you guys ever get exposure to those?
No.
Oh, there would be gigantic. And this is in high school, zombies wars where like, you know, you'd have people who all started out. You'd have Nerf guns and there would be like one zombie. And as long as you could hit the zombie with the Nerf gun, they weren't allowed to touch you. But if they touched you, they turned you to a zombie until, you know, there was only one person left. And so this, you know, took place over weeks, sometimes months. People get really into it in terms of like, you know, they would have platoons moving together between classes and locations. Like it got kind of out of hand. And that's the question I'd love to pose to you guys is where is the edge on this? Clearly, you know, looking up someone's data is wrong, right?
I mean, finding out where they live and post like putting a note on their front door to psych them out, I don't know if it is the line, but I'd say it's pretty far behind it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely across the line. So here's another example was a couple times someone who plays the game said she at least three times in a year was about to leave to go top off her nodes, which is a thing you do. I have no idea. So I assume that's a thing. And found that her car had been like blocked in by another car. So like she was locked in her parking spot and couldn't go get the bonuses. That feels you can't do that unless you have hacked the data or you're a psychopath stalking someone. So that's over the line. But like what level of engagement, especially if you're opting into this experience, where's that line for you guys? Like how immersed would you want to get in a game like this?
I felt uncomfortable when I went to the Pokemon stop or whatever it was outside of Longworth.
Sure, yeah.
And there were people there who were like catching, like I don't want to interact with people. That's probably why it stopped playing that game. I mean I'll take a back seat on this one because I'm disqualified, But yeah, it all kind of freaks me out. Somebody else.
I'm kind of in your boat, Cole. I didn't ever go anywhere that was super, like, either it was really, really public or there was like nobody around when I went to Pokestops. So that was cool. And then like I would see one guy maybe, and that was okay. But when it got to be a bunch of people, I was just like weirded out by it. And I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want people to be able to track where I was at all the time. I mean, I know somebody can somewhere because I have a phone, but mm-hmm. you know, I don't like that. So yeah. I'm not a fan. Go, Ben.
I think it depends on like the environment. Like I think like 99.9% of the time, this is like not okay behavior sort of thing. Like going to someone's house and leaving a note, that's not okay. I could see it being like, if you know all these people and you're playing like a game and everybody's like in the same like understanding of like this, you know, like if it's like a board game or something like that, I can understand like friendly competition and doing things like blocking someone's car in or something, as long as it's like everyone knows one another and are like friends with one another. Yeah. If you're doing this with strangers, it's like that's not okay behavior and that's kind of creepy. Yep.
I think you found the line, Ben.
Yep.
Well, that's I'm trying to find an article about these like Nerf zombie wars. And I think that's a good parallel because the people who like signed up for it were bought in and they were like, okay, you know, you're not allowed to play during lunch period, but any other time is on limits, or you know, they had kind of constraints on it that everyone played by. But then, like I said, getting your group from the high school to the football field for practice was an ordeal, and you had to coordinate and have scouts and like, but yeah. People were bought in to playing that way and knew what they were getting into up front. And it was a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's that's tough. I mean, I had the same experience with Pokemon Go where like, you know, we were sitting at a stop and taking over a gym or whatever. And there was a couple sitting across from us and it's like, we took it over. And then it was very clear, like they took it over and, yeah. We were kind of skeezed out. Anyway, we kind of got up and left. We were like, assholes. And we walked away because they had higher level Pokemon.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So what are you going to do? But like, there's not. Yeah, that is, you're not looking to interact with people in that instance.
No. And it's kind of hard to hold that against the game itself. I think what we've kind of drilled down to, it's like, oh, well, do you know what you've signed up for? People who are playing this game where you like walk to a place a couple times a day and check a number and maybe there's some fiction about a conspiracy or whatever, like that is exactly what they signed up for, is to walk to a place and watch a number go up. What they didn't sign up for was this skeezy fucking shit where like somebody breaks into the back of it and says like, haha, now I know where you are, now I can track your movements and establish your routine. That's really powerful information.
To kind of, what are they doing about it? From what I read, Niantic has identified the people who have broken in this way and banned them, but it's not clear from the article if they actually did anything to fix the vulnerability.
To make the location data less discoverable or...
Yeah, you know. So it's like, it's not clear if the Riot software is still available, but less powerful tools have kind of floated around forever, and I'm sure they'll kind of be omnipresent.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much is reasonable to expect Niantic to do to stop it versus just, you know, that people are incentivized in this game to know more about where their competition is. And so they're always going to find a way to do that.
Yeah.
Interesting setup. I found a zombies versus humans article that I posted as reference for what exactly the hell that is.
Yeah. I never heard about this.
Weird. Yeah. I don't know if it was ever big at UC.
Okay. Huh. Well, this ingress thing has me feeling real filthy, so I'm going to go take a shower before we do the next session. Here we go. Back in like 15 minutes.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this is all about time warp games, by which I mean games where you sit down and just magically then it's like 3 hours later. So... what are some of those games that you know you just should not start playing, even if you can't afford to lose several hours? Yeah. And then on the other side of that time warp, do you feel satisfied about it, or do you feel like you were cheated?
Oh, that is a good additional question. So I'll get us started here with Christopher, who writes, I remember The Binding of Isaac being like that for me. The same with Fallout, Fallout 2, and New Vegas. More recently, West of Loathing has been sucking up a ton of time. I'm cool with the time loss because I don't have much of a life anyway. if it wasn't a game, it would probably be a TV show marathon. True.
Like, yeah, Chris, that might be more on the way you play games than on the specific game there. It's a pretty wide variety.
Yeah, especially since West of Loathing is like a 10-hour game.
What are you doing?
He digs deep.
Yeah, he looks for all them jokes. Yeah. Binding of Isaac, I think, is going to be a popular one. I haven't scanned the responses, but I can see that being popular among
roguelikes. Yeah.
Yeah. Jala, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says Dark Souls, or Dishonored. Each time I play either one, it magically becomes morning before I know it.
Yeah, I can see Dark Good Souls. Games. Again, Dishonored is such a short game.
Yeah. Well, that depends on how you play. Like, if you're like me and you're going through every little nook and cranny and then doubling back and then trying to, like, take down every person in the level or whatever the hell. I mean, like, if you're very meticulous about it, it can take a lot longer.
Yeah, get lost.
Or if you're like me and you're terrible at it and constantly have to reset and get infuriated.
Well, then there's that, too. Like, if you're on the other end where you're like, no, somebody saw me, got to reset and do it again.
And then go complain on a podcast which I do with people who like this game. Look at me.
That's why I've invested a decade into this podcast, and so I'd have a platform to complain about Dishonored. Yeah.
That is okay, because I have differing opinions than various people about all the things that I play, so it is fine.
That's funny. Ben, what does Jason say?
Jason says, I'll avoid what will probably be a popular answer in Stardew Valley and go with Metal Gear Solid 5. While it is a big sandbox that you can waste some time in, I reached a point where, knowing how bad and indecisive I am at stealth, missions would require a good bit of time commitment to complete. Sadly, lack of said time to devote to it led me to put down the game to be continued in the future.
I hear that last sentence quite a bit, because that's the reason I just stopped messing with Dark Souls, because I know that like if I start playing it, I've said it many times, but when I first played Dark Souls, I played like 19 hours in 2 days over one weekend. And so like I know what would happen if I started playing Dark Souls, and I don't have time for that right now. So
yeah, that's and I could see that happening with Metal Gear Solid 5 specifically too, just because it does have its particular structure.
Okay, so that's one I have to avoid. Gotcha.
Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say avoid it, because I enjoy it. Although, since I enjoy it, you're probably not going to like it. So.
Well, I don't know. See, here's the thing, Cole. Either I violently hate the things that you recommend, or I absolutely love and I'm completely on the same page with you. It's one or the other. It's like a 50-50 shot. So.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Nick say?
Nick says, lately it's been Nuclear Throne. For some reason, with all the new stuff coming out lately, I've found myself playing a lot more of it in between sessions of Mario Odyssey. It's difficult to an almost comic degree, but by the end of a few hours, I always find myself being a little better at it than when I started, which is always the goal for me in any game. One of those days, I'll beat it for the first time, just not in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Nuclear Throne's another one of those. It's a roguelike. That's by the Ridiculous Fishing People.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he capitalizes it all the time, because it just makes me think of it like movie It.
Yeah. We all float down here, It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear. Griffin writes, any open world game, currently Horizon Zero Dawn. The to-do list of side missions is addictive as I try to clear it. Yeah. I'm running into that, like, you know, because I need to motivate myself to play more Witcher 3. Not to play it, but to play as much of it as I need to, because I fell into the Stardew hole, and I'm kind of digging myself out. Like different things. Like I've put up different structures around it to like add the to do list to it specifically. So like my whiteboard is now just a list of Witcher 3 quests, and as I finish them, I cross them off.
Oh man,
looking to clear the entire thing. So yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. hey, you know, gotta do it. Gotta do it. Jala, what does Chase say?
Chase says, Prison Architect, if I fall behind in podcast listening, that's the one game I know for a fact will help me catch up in my listening at the cost of watching 9 p.m. turn into 2:30 a.m.
You said it, buddy. I might be pulling a Jolly here and say I don't know if I should ever go back to that because I did fall into such a hole when it was an alpha.
Sure.
That might actually be dangerous for me.
I had to stop playing Besiege because you can make like siege engines and stuff in that game. And like, that's the same kind of thing where I'm just like fucking around with it and just messing with it so much that, yeah, I can sit there and just play that. And then just, I didn't realize how much time that took.
Yeah. And Prison Architect, you're almost always going from crisis to crisis and they generally overlap. So like if you're looking for a time of, you know, relative, oh, everything is in order, you're not going to find it. Huh, man, Chase, why did you put that back in my head?
I'm going to get you now.
Do they have it on Switch?
No, they don't. It's only on PC, which it's not that much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, what does Ignacio say?
Ignacio says, any Civilization game. I've lost hundreds of hours to that series, and they were totally worth it.
One more turn.
That's a deep hole there.
Yeah, I had a real hard time with Civilization Revolution on the DS of all systems. Yeah.
It is very much a time sink.
It is a good one, though. Dennis, what does Ethan say?
Ethan says, invading in Dark Souls 3 is an easy way for me to make several hours disappear. Once I get started, I'm not satisfied until I get a decent number of tongues. And that is often pretty difficult due to the way most people play through the DLCs with a vanguard of white and yellow phantoms. If I manage to get a bit of hate mail, it ends up feeling pretty good afterwards. Otherwise, I'd say it's pretty neutral.
Hmm. Just a way for you to play more Dark Souls against new and different people. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the fact that the game, at least for him, has gotten to the point where like invading is as dangerous for the invader as the invadee.
That's a big, like, when we did the Dark Souls 3 PvP episodes, the person that we got on, his name is Peeve Peverson, he's like a big guy in the YouTube Dark Souls community, or was he was at the time, I don't know if he's moved on to other stuff. He said that was a big problem that the PvP people had with invading specifically, is because the way matchmaking works, any single invader is almost always going to be put up against a gang squad of a bunch of people. So it's this kind of strange, turning of the tables where it's the people who are invading who end up feeling beset upon.
Yeah, but at the same time, I've never had an invader in Dark Souls that was not min-maxed and super skilled. At least it feels that way. That's the way I remember it.
Yeah.
So they know what they're walking into.
True.
And I need the help.
Yeah. Let's see. Javier says, at the moment, Shadow of War, the Nemesis system keeps me way into the game. Man, you think I would have heard more about that game.
What he's saying is that managing org structure is what's keeping him up late
at
night.
I think you mean orc structure.
Yes, I do.
Sorry. You can't throw softballs, man.
No, that's squarely on me.
Yep.
I'll take responsibility.
Oh, man. Anyway, Jala, what does David say?
David said, I just started playing Witcher 3 because it's covered for WoW, and I understand how people can put so many hours in this game now. Nothing makes me happier in a game like this than a trusty steed in a map full of things to go explore, and my time vanishes before I can say, come on, Roach. 100% worth it.
Roach is the name of Geralt's horse. Whatever horse he has at the time.
That's good context.
Yeah. Yeah, and also you said it wrong. Come on, Roach.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't know, I didn't play the game.
Witcher 3, it's very good, and you know, you're clearing a gigantic map. Like the world in that game has no right to be as big as it is, and you're doing a lot of really interesting stories. It's strange to have an open world game where I'm not mechanically motivated to go do the next thing, but I just desperately want to see more of what it wants to show me next.
It's just such a pretty map. Like, the environment is so beautiful.
I mean, just when you get dropped off, you're like, okay, I'm in Velen. Like, I'm just, like, in this kind of swamp thing. And then you zoom out, like, whoa! Yeah. It puts every other game to shame in that regard. And now I need to stop before I just burn all of my Witcher 3 cast. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I feel this way about Final Fantasy XIV. It looks and seems like a very fun and deep game, but trying to learn all those new systems, I may have to limit the number of forever games in my life.
Yep. Forever games is a useful term.
Yeah, just I will never not have a session of this game or a character in this game somewhere in the background.
It's always going to be waiting for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, Zelda, or most anything I get time to play. Destiny, GTS, all the things. Depends on the game. I don't waste my game time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good perspective. The going into the game with the mentality of, okay, if I wake up on the other end of 3 hours, will I be mad at myself?
Yeah.
As a criteria for whether or not to play the game.
If I come to, yeah. So this is going to sound like a crazy thing, and I know this isn't the time for it, but this has actually gotten a lot better for me ever since I started putting clocks next to all my screens.
Oh, smart.
Yeah. I don't know if that's contributing to, like, an ambient anxiety, but yeah.
You need more things to give you anxiety, Cole. I don't think you have enough.
Yeah, just pile more on. Open door policy. Yeah.
See, what I need, and maybe this is just the way I write emails or text. I don't need the clock next to a screen for a game. I need it next to the screen if I'm writing an email or writing a text, because I edit myself so heavily and go through, like, versions. And this is for a freaking text before I send it. And I think it's been, like, 10 seconds. And Jen will be like, hey, we were supposed to leave a half hour ago. Is that an email almost?
That is inexplicable. I don't understand that at all.
It's a weird quirk.
Let's see here. Greg writes, I think we have enough to go all the way around. There's a bunch of games I really want to play, but have held back because I know it's going to be a really big time sink. These include Tyranny, Dragon Age Inquisition, Thimbleweed Park, Final Fantasy 15, Last of Us, and others. Maybe one of these years. A dog, go play Thimbleweed Park. It's like a 10-hour game.
It's on my phone. I will play it sometime.
Ooh. Yeah. I didn't realize it was on phones.
I think I'll like that one.
It is very good. I like Thimbleweed Park a great deal. Yeah. Let's see here. Jala, what does Marisan say?
Shovel Knight, mostly, but I guess it also goes for Majora's Mask and Super Metroid. It's not so much that I don't feel I can lose a few hours to a game. It's more that I want to respect the game and not just play it for the sake of playing it. I want to take the games on its own terms, on their own terms. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a nice way to put it. And it's kind of like I do that too sometimes, and I'll let it sit. And for anybody who's ever watched me stream, I only usually stream for like an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours. I don't really stream for very long chunks. Mm-hmm. And part of that is say when I stop with Resident Evil 7 in my stream, I just needed to have some time before I go back to it. And I needed to think about it and whatever before I go back into it. Not because I'm terrified of it or anything like that, but it shoves a lot of stuff in your face, literally.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, I need some time before I get back to that, just because it's just very extreme. So yeah. I'm like, okay, well, I'll get back to that at some point after I've reflected on everything. And I think it benefits if I tried to cram all of it down my own throat. I probably would pretty much hate it, I think. Yeah. So it's a good idea for me to take breaks. Yeah. So I'm down with that.
Breaks are always good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, what does Tim say?
There's a car in the background right now. I don't know if it's audible.
No, it's not.
All right. I'm going to go in. Sorry. Tim says, StarCraft Warcraft 2. I have a severe, I'll just set up my base problem, which leads to my entire evening disappearing. Oh. Always a good choice.
Man, setting up your base is the entire game, though.
Yeah,
I feel like these can go either direction until the last sentence of the comments.
Yeah. I'm gonna That's pretty, yeah. Now I'm just going to roll credits on this. Okay, cool.
So I don't think we're going to talk about it today, but StarCraft II was announced to be going free to play.
Uh-huh.
So, Tim, you'll have a bunch of fresh meat to chomp on as well.
Yes, this is the day you've been waiting for, my friend.
Yeah. Prepare to lose a lot more nights.
Dennis, round us out with Mike.
Yeah, Mike says The Witcher 3. That's the surprise favorite of this one. Mm-hmm. I bought it a year and a half ago, but there just isn't enough time in the day. Oddly, I did recently play Witcher 2 finally and blasted through it in like 25 hours.
That's what folks say. Witcher 2 is short.
Yeah. Huh.
If 25 hours is short, it is short for that kind of game.
I was going to say, is 25 hours the stay on the critical path, be a critical path Johnny playthrough, or is that like you can actually explore a bit and the game is just that short?
The other person that I heard cite that number said that they did a fair number of side quest kind of stuff, but not all of it. Yeah. Cool. That's all the people we have in there right now. Mine is going to be boring and obvious, Stardew Valley. Mm-hmm. Now that I've kind of started streaming it, I have less motivation to just like play it in bed, which was part of my problem before, was playing Stardew Valley in lieu of sleep. but yeah, I fell down a very deep dark hole with that, and I think I'm getting better.
that's when it strikes.
Yes. let's see, Jella, how about you? What do you lose time to?
Well, I already mentioned Dark Souls before, which is why I can't play that game. But puzzle games, Puzzle Juice, for example, where you have colors and shapes to match up and words to spell, and Pokemon Puzzle Challenge, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, Room Escape games, any of that crap. I can start playing that and then just like not know what time it is, because then it's like, oh, but there's only one more puzzle until the next, you know, and then I just keep going. Or with some of them, like Puzzle Juice and Pokemon Puzzle Challenge, it gets to the point where it gets so fast that I know that if I stop and then try to resume later, there's no fucking way I'll be able to like start up fresh and be as fast as like the level I stopped on. Yeah. So I just keep going until I die, which means that I go for a very, very long time because I don't die very easily on those games. And then stuff that's open world, Elder Scrolls or whatever. If you let me wander around, I will do just that. I will wander and I will come and create my own things to do. I probably won't even be doing quests. I'll just be doing whatever the fuck I feel like. Things like 80 Days or Lone Wolf and, you know, also Sorcery. Mm-hmm. All of those games are like primarily text games, but, you know, like they're text venture. Whatever. Yeah, all of those are all along the same lines. Like they all play very similarly, at least in my mind, Lone Wolf being the most actiony of those. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those types of games, I can sit there and play that, and then like it's hours later and I'm like, damn it. yeah, and then every once in a while a dungeon crawler like Legend of Grimrock or Eye of the Beholder will catch my attention, but yeah, it has to be a really good one for me to be that excited about.
Yeah.
So
all of those are games with kind of a particular rhythm to them, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I think the two for me are RTS games are like a huge time sink. Usually I think it's bad. Or usually I regret the amount of time spent on playing those games. The other one that I think is Magic the Gathering is a pretty big time sink at times. But I actually feel pretty okay with that because I feel like there's a good amount of like puzzle, like problem solving going on when you play that game. So
yeah,
haven't regretted that yet.
Are you referring to like going to events and playing a lot of Magic with other people, or are you talking about
Yeah,
that feels like it's part of a different thing because it's because it is a social engagement as well.
I was gonna say, do you feel like you would lose something then if you could like drop in, play a game, and immediately jump out? Like, is there something to the fact that it is a multiple hour investment that kind of makes it more fun or better?
Part of the reason why I'm saying this is I played a match over the weekend where a group of friends got together and we like did a draft and did a miniature tournament, but it started at like 10, and then like by the time it was over, I was like, oh, what time is it? It's like 3:00, and I was like, oh, that felt like a half an hour to an hour top. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the zone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as to RTSs, that's actually, like, I don't really play RTSs, and that's the exact reason why, because it takes so long that I just don't have the time to invest in them as much as I would normally be interested in that type of game. It's just, it's a long con, and I don't have time for that. So. Yeah.
No. It's weird because it's like very addicting, you know, and so it's like it's fun in a sense, but yeah, it definitely feels like a drug almost, where yeah.
Yeah, and then the thing is, kind of like how you say, if I play an RTS, then I'm like, when I'm on the other end of that, then I do. I regret that. I may or may not regret anything else that I play, but like I will regret my RTS time because I feel like I could have done these many other things, and I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is with that particular genre, but so, that's my reaction as well.
So I wonder if there was like a persistent reward that you had for playing an RTS, if that would like ameliorate like that feeling of guilt where it's
because that, it's like that after, might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the match is done, it's like, well, nothing's changed in the game. I just spent, you know, 5 or 6 hours playing this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's probably that would probably do the trick, I think.
Yeah.
Like if there were smaller goals to be reached that, you know, felt like you'd gotten to several different points rather than I got through this many hours of the game and it doesn't feel like very much has happened, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hmm. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine actually is League of Legends. So that's those games are 40 minutes easy.
Huh, not Hearthstone?
On average. No, Hearthstone, well, Hearthstone, I think I was pretty good at dropping in for a match and then dropping out. And so I'd lose like 15 minutes at a time because the games always go longer than you expect. But I never, I won't say I never, I didn't as frequently like just lose hours and hours.
Right.
However, League, I would always sign in with the mentality of, oh, I'll just play one game. You know, I got 40 minutes before I go to bed. But if you win, you're like, yeah, I'm on fire. Got to go again. And if you lose, you're like, well, I'm just going to be in a horrible mood if I don't, you know, redeem this before I go to sleep. And I would fit in 4 games in a night when I sat down and intending to play only one. And then whether or not it was worth it, I'd end on a high if I won and just be completely, you know, devastated for the night if I lost. So I just did not know how to play one game of League before going to bed.
Right. Huh. Well, that certainly didn't make me feel good thinking about that. Like, I don't like thinking about wasting time. Dennis, I can't believe you've done this. Oh.
How dare you?
Oh, well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis and Jala.
The Grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, since you were not here during the last episode, we're going to start with you.
Okay, so the first thing that I did is I popped into We Happy Few for a second to look around and see if there was any Halloween stuff, but I didn't see any Halloween stuff, and I'm betting it was all in the town that I didn't get to yet, where the wellies are. You know, like all the happy people. I bet it was probably all crazy looking for Halloween, but I missed it because I didn't get that far. And I didn't have enough time to, like, really get there. And I'd really, like I said before, I don't really want to play a lot of this game because I want to wait for it to come out for real, you know?
Yeah, get a proper release.
Yeah. So, I think that'll be probably where I set the game down for now because I don't want to overexpose myself and then get bored of it. And then, like, when it comes out, go, oh, now I got to do this again. You know, I don't want to do that. So anyway, I popped in, didn't see any Halloween stuff. So that's just a follow up from prior. The two main things that I played, I will talk about first, Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions, because I'm still fucking playing that game.
The continuing saga.
The continuing saga of Jala playing this game. All right, so Cole, you told me that I was probably like, in a quote, like 3 battles away from the end. Probably something like 3 battles away from the end is what you said. I looked up how many battles I actually had left. 20, motherfucker, 20.
What? Wait, I thought you said
20, motherfucker. I was so mad. I was just like, okay, that is not like fucking three.
So during the break, you warned me that you were going to flip a table over on me. I apologize for misinforming you. However, I recall chapter 4 being incredibly brief.
Okay, so anyway, I'll just keep on talking about where I'm at. I finished the Limbury Castle sequence and the random battle in Dordor on my way across the whole fucking map to the place that the whole thing started in the first fucking place, and I've got to go through a bunch of fucking random battles to get there, which makes me very mad. I also see a bunch of optional content floating around, and I'm sure that if you really love random battles, it's great, but screw it. I'm on hour 52 now,
okay.
And I've realized that between this and Persona 4, Persona 4 Golden, I realized that my tolerance level caps out at about 40 hours.
Okay.
And so I'm on hour 52, and I'm like, I'm playing it, and I'm not like completely, I'm not mad at the game, other than the fact that now I got to go across the fucking map to go to the next battle. Like, fuck you, game. But other than that, like, it's fine. Yeah.
So,
like, I'm waiting for the game to be done. And, like, the story is, I guess, getting a little bit better. At least there's more stuff going on and things are, you know, happening, which is good, because for a while there, I didn't feel like a whole lot was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's just like, I was like, okay, I'm almost at the end. I'm going to finish this out, but fuck you. God damn it. I'm so mad.
Yeah, like, you've got a lot. Man, you should just stop playing this game. It's making you miserable.
I know.
Sometimes you just got to Skyrim your way through it.
I want to
finish the fucking game. And the thing is that I'm not mad at the battles where shit is actually important. I'm mad at any random battle that I have to do. I have no tolerance for random battles at this point in my life. Yeah. At this particular point, I have put 52 hours into the game. I have done enough random battles. I don't want to have to go across the whole map, and I'm very mad that I have to. It's to the point now that literally what I do is if I get stuck in a random battle, I will fucking turn it off and reload it so that I can and save it between towns so I don't have to do the random battles, which is tedious, but so are the battles. So,
yeah. What you're describing is entirely alien to my experience.
I'm done with those battles. I'm just like, nope. I wish there was like an item where you can just deuce out of those, because I just want to get to the end of the story and be done with it. Like I said, I like the way it plays is fine. Like, I like the systems and all that. Once I got a hold of what was going on, and like I said, the story is actually kind of picking up a little bit, which is cool. Some of the stuff that goes on in the battles is kind of cool. But I really feel that this game is one of those games that you have to, in order to get the max enjoyment out of it, you have to, number one, like those random battles and want to wander around the map and go do all these other random side quests that you can do. Because there's probably, because of all the availability of all these side quests and stuff, means that there's a lot of content that I'm totally missing. There's a bunch of classes that I haven't really gotten a very good grip on that I would have to replay this game multiple times and aim for those classes. So it's like, it requires again, one of those really long time investments. Except I'm not really interested in, you know, doing that as much as, you know, the game plays well. It's kind of, I've said it several times at this point. This game, if I had played it when I was, you know, younger and I had more time, because, like, I wasn't trying to, you know, run marathons and shit. Like, I had time in my life, you know, for that. Like, I don't have time right now to want to play random battles. Like, there are people who can zen out. I'm not one of those people. I oftentimes get mad. So that's my big sticking point. But I recognize that had I played this game, you know, several years ago, I would have, you know, really been down for it.
Yeah.
If I play it again, it'll be like way in the future, and it will go a lot smoother because I've already played it once, so I know what I'm doing. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry for misleading you on how much game you had left. I just, I remember the last little bit kind of skating by.
I know. I actually, what happened is I looked it up and I laughed, and then I'm like, I'm going to get Cole. I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you shit. So let's give you some more shit of Resident Evil 7, the other thing I played, as I said.
No. Jella, I never sat down and looked you in the eye and said, you must play this game. So I'm not going to distance myself from having said nice things about it in the past. It's a good game.
You know? I love it, getting all worked up.
There's some kind of weird association that's built. Is now anytime Jella doesn't like a game, she's assuming that Cole told her that she has to play it.
That's basically what I was going to say. Is like at this point, it's just a running gag, you know. But besides which, I wanted to play Resident Evil 7 for myself because it's a Resident Evil game, and I like Resident Evil, so that is why I wanted to play this game. Nobody told me that I needed to play it. So, you know, I will say that. However, I do know that you like this game. And so you may feel bad and you may not. I don't know. And I don't care, Cole. That is your problem. Okay.
Yeah, this is true.
So first, I was given this game by Greg as it came up on the Halloween sale. Hmm. So on Steam. So thank you, Greg. I streamed the first part of it last Tuesday when we didn't record because it was Halloween, and a few of the listeners were kind of sad face about us not having a level. So I figured I might as well spend time with them somehow. So a couple of people popped in and watched. So that was cool. Thanks to the people who popped over. And I'll mention some things that I have random commentary, and this is completely random shit, by the way, before I actually express any opinions about my time in the game. So the opening cinematics, Mia's mouth, what the fuck with Mia's mouth? Like, the rest of this game, everything else but her mouth and the car are realistic looking. The car doesn't look realistic, but it didn't bug me so much. But the way that the girl's mouth moves... just it's a running pet peeve of mine that bothers me in like every single Resident Evil game. But you know what she looks like? She looks like a chipmunk or a hamster that has cheek pouches that are too full, and she's trying to talk around them and failing really miserably. That's what she looks like to me. She just, it's ridiculous. The foliage at the very start is flat and really silly looking. It reminds me of those flat cockroaches in Dishonored Death of the Outsider that I was so enchanted by that I had to take video of them.
Oh, the ones that were just animated textures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the weird little roaches. It was kind of like
2D ones. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the foliage was flat too. And I'm like, huh, it's flat. I like the really weird round rear view mirrors on Ethan's car. I like them way too much. I was spazzing about them when I was streaming. The accept her gift sign that's outside in the beginning of the game, it's in red, but it really needs to be in blood. I was so disappointed that it wasn't actually blood. That made me sad.
How could you tell it wasn't in blood?
Because it wasn't, if it was blood, it wasn't obviously blood. It was not drippy. And then if they had barbed wire wrapping the sign on there, there should be like blood on the barbed wire and shit. Okay. Like, you know, that's my opinion on the matter. But anyway, I totally love the deer leg beholder so much.
Oh, you know, yeah.
You know about the deer leg? Here, I'll put it in the Slack here. The deer leg beholder, it kind of also looks like the mask that Zim wears in the Jason Momoa Conan movie. Like, the bad guy wears like this mask that has this weird I don't know.
Here's the thing. Those aren't deer legs, those are horse legs. Somebody's doing horse sculpture.
The fuck, I don't know. Anyway, it's some kind of a leg. And
oh, this is red, it's not blood. These are deer but not horses.
I don't care. Well, anyway, the point
is... The story seems pretty shaky.
I was very excited about that, but I was very sad that the voodoo dolls were not in the little room under the stairway. I rushed over there to be reunited with them because I saw them in the playable trailer and I was so excited about them, and they weren't there. Yeah. And the people in the video bore me so much that I was like, I did not realize how much I hated them until I played this game. You know, because I watched it in the playable trailer and I was like tolerating it there. But I think I complained when I was playing the playable trailer too.
Yeah, you're talking about the sewer sharks or whatever their name was, the haunted house YouTube show that you find the tapes of. Yeah,
that irritated those people irritate me. Oh, Oh, and then also, I'll be kind of vague. When she slams herself into the wall, it's totally not convincing, and I laugh my ass off. It was funny as hell. I was just like, okay, that's great.
Right.
Very silly. Anyway, that's all the random, completely random commentary. So I'll talk about the actual game now. It plays well. It has great lighting and sound, for sure. Can totally get down with all that stuff. They have some really memorable scenes so far. I stopped right after the fight in the garage.
Okay.
When she comes after you the second time and after dinner and when he's doing donuts.
Yeah.
Like, all that stuff is really, really memorable to me. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But.
But.
I have two major issues.
Okay.
Okay. First one is the stereotypes. Resi always has stereotypes. It has stereotypes aplenty in, like, the Spanish villagers in 4 and the African villagers in 5. Uh-huh. So I question what it was that bothered me about this iteration of stereotypes versus the prior Resi games. And what I came up with is this. In 4 and 5, it's distasteful and it's omnipresent, but it's a bit more removed because it's generic enemies and they don't, like, talk to you or anything. They're just, like, there. Whereas in 7, it's literally in your face being shoved down your throat.
Okay.
And I know other people can get down with hillbilly, swamp people, redneck stereotypes and not care, but this particular presentation just made me absolutely sick. And it's interesting because I didn't mind the rednecks in Walking Dead Season 1 at the farm. And probably because they didn't come across as being gross exaggerations. But the way that they do in this game feel like gross exaggerations. And I really don't like it. And I don't see that it's going to change either. So this is probably going to be an ongoing problem for me.
I mean, the cast windows down. And a lot of what happens is shown in a different light as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they're, you know, whether or not that makes up for what you have seen for the discomfort of, you know, taking shots at what appears to be, you know, poor people who live in a shitty part of the country. You know, that's up to you, but I will say that it does kind of evolve over the course of things.
Okay. Well, then that's good that maybe it'll not be so bad later. No.
There's an important line in the videotape. They're not backward. They're just quiet. That is actually true. Uh-huh. And you'll see it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, the other thing that bothers me is the gore. Now, I'm not squeamish, and the thing is that there are plenty of other ways. There's plenty of ways to evoke horror, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between the over-the-top stereotypes and the in-your-face gross stuff that this game is going for, it just seems like super cheap methods of trying to evoke character and horror, and I'm really not digging it. Like, it's just like, okay, that's just unnecessary. You know?
So you're talking about, like, the screwdriver through the hand or the chainsaw.
Well, I actually don't even care about the screwdriver through the hand or the chainsaw, to be honest. It's not even that. It's just like there's just gross shit all over the place. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
It's when he picked his nose. That's the line.
Yeah, sure. Well, anyway, I mean, like, there's just, like, a bunch of parts where it's just like, okay, if you watch the stream, like, the archive of the stream, mm-hmm. you'll see my face. You'll see where I'm just like, okay, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I guess, yeah, the chainsaw, there was a part with that definitely I was just like, that was unnecessary. I mean, like, I have, like, very little reaction to anything in this game because I just can't. You know, I have a certain degree of separation from it, and I can't get immersed enough to be scared by this game. Mm-hmm. Somebody who was watching me stream it commented that he'd never want to play it because he'd be too scared. And yeah, like I'm really not scared by this game. Probably, you know, like my comments when I'm playing this game, stuff like, this bitch gonna try to kill me. I don't care if she's your wife. Kill her, you know. And can't you pick up that chainsaw? For real, boy, what you doing? And where'd grandma go? Does she just teleport? And like, and stuff like, who the fuck has a corded phone in 2017? That's my concern. I don't care about all these knocking sounds over in the corner that I'm hearing. I want to know about this corded phone. that's like what I'm focusing on. And, I got into this conversation with Chris Schley via Facebook, and he recently started this game too, and he's a little bit behind me. And he's terrified by this game. He had to set it down for a while because he was creeped out. And my issue is immersion. This shit can scare me if it's in the right mix. Like, for example, Among the Sleep scared me because you play a two-year-old in a half-real and half-nightmare world, and you can die, and you have a drunk and abusive mother. But Amnesia, at least the part I played of it, and Bioshock and Resi 7 just don't absorb my attention in the same way. Yeah. So I don't get freaked out by it. Yeah. Resi 7 might have properly immersed me, except the cheap shots are the things that are just, the cheap shots, and I don't care about any of the characters.
The cheap shots, by which you mean just like really over the top, like shock style horror, not anything related to gameplay.
Yeah, it's the shock horror stuff that I'm just like, really, and the over the top characterization, going really deep into the stereotypes to just throw that in your face, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, whatever. I can tell, like, with the visuals, the lighting and the sounds, especially since I'm using headphones for this. Yeah. If it weren't for the fact that, I don't give a fuck about the characters and there's a lot of this cheap shock value stuff that I'm just like, That's lame. You could do better. You can do better. What is this?
I really
put love and care into the rest of it. This is bullshit.
I really wish that there was a more, let's say, articulated vocabulary for describing different kinds of horror.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a little bit more nuance around like saying, oh, this is funny and here's why it's funny. And that's something I'm trying to do with, Hex Crank on those streams, and if I ever start writing again on those articles, is say that, because if somebody watches my streams, I'm never like, oh gosh, guys, like, you'll hear me if something gets me, but it's not like an exercise in watching somebody be terrified, right? Mm-hmm. And the reaction, is kind of, I'm kind of tempering it to say here's what the shade is. I think that would actually make it so that somebody wouldn't stay away from a game that wouldn't press their particular button, or make it so they do avoid something that is like, oh, totally, no, I can't. I just can't do this. Mm-hmm. Because we just have one blanket word or one blanket phrase. Oh, this looks too scary for me.
What's the word for the type of horror that comes when the walls are made of material that they shouldn't be made of?
Is that what gets you?
We gotta start inventing these terms. They're not out there right now, so we've got to do it.
Yeah, meatballs.
Well, because and the thing is that I think with Among the Sleep, the key word there would be psychological horror, because just mm-hmm. the idea of like, I can empathize better with a little two-year-old. I can have compassion for a two-year-old with an abusive mom who's powerless, mm-hmm. Very notably powerless, versus, homie who is too fucking stupid to call a cop or bring a weapon when he goes to an abandoned house in the middle of fucking nowhere trying to look for his wife who's been gone for 3 years. You're a dumbass and you need to die. I'm sorry, you need to die. So whatever. I don't have any empathy for him. I don't have any empathy for anybody else in the game so far. I'm not finding it cute. I'm not finding it funny. I am not a big fan of shock horror. So that particular style of horror is not my bag. So I'm hoping that there's stuff that's not just that kind of stuff. It's not that I'm squeamish. I'm just that doesn't work on me. That's not appealing to me.
Like I said, it shades through to different stuff. That first hour, everything up through that garage fight is pretty singular among the stuff that you're going to see.
Okay. I mean, it's very memorable. That's for sure. And that's why I kind of like was like, all right, I need to take a break from this game. This is a good place to just not play anymore for now. Think about it, take a break from it, and then I'll come back and play it. Not because I'm terrified of it, but just I need some time, before I go back in there. So
I will take issue. Yeah. I think that it's a very funny game.
Well, I haven't found anything to be funny so far.
Yeah, that's also that's also subjective too.
Yeah.
Yep. Huh. Well.
I don't actually have like a real opinion about it so far. Like I said, it plays well, and you know, it has some elements that are really great. There are some things that have totally turned me off about it so far, but I'm not all the way through the game yet. I'm not even halfway through the game. So
you're also like just about to get to the portion of the game that has kind of the game's combat system in it. Uh-huh. Like when you're fighting Jack in the garage, I mean, you figured it out, but like that's not supposed to be a fight, right? You're gonna get to like I'm going through hallways and fighting enemies, and I think that portion takes a different turn that might appeal to you in a different way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will see.
I'm not promising anything. If you end up not liking it, then this game has always sucked.
Yeah. I already flipped my table on you with Final Fantasy, so it's all good.
Alas, I have only no one tables to flip. Episode.
Yeah, one table per episode. No more tables must die.
And is that all?
I have a question. Sure. Would you play this game in VR, given the opportunity?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
I'm not scared by this game, so I don't give a shit. Put a VR helmet on my head, it's fine.
Yeah. Damn.
That just means that I can go examine, you know, the fucking corded phone in VR. Yay! Who the hell has one of these?
Didn't the government man come around and put hot glue in all them wall holes, what you would plug them into?
You know, here's the thing, like on those VHS tapes, when you put it in there, it actually says that they were made in 2017. That's bullshit. Who the fuck uses VHS anymore, especially for a show? That's bullshit.
Yeah, that does kind of defy credibility.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's a little bit much, dude. Yeah. I mean, like if they just had a lot of archaic stuff, you know, like they've got the tape player and they've got the, you know, VHS. Okay, cool. But it literally has it dated 2017 when that happened. I'm like, no, no. Where did Grandma go? Did she teleport for real? I mean, like, is Grandma teleporting?
She's sneaky. She's a very sneaky Grandma. Her wheels are well oiled.
Well, I guess so, because, like, she was at the table, and then, like, you know, one dude gets up and goes, the other lady runs out like a crazy person, and then whatever, and then, like, I turn around, and then, like, she's gone. I'm like, what the fuck?
Oops, no grandmas. Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Huh.
As compared to the serial, oops, all grandmas.
Ben or Dennis, do you have other questions about Resident Evil 7?
No, I'm sorry you're not enjoying it more.
Well, I am too, because I was hoping to really like get down on it and be like, yeah, Rizzy. And I mean, like, I'm reserving judgment on it. I'm not 100% sold. It plays well enough that I will play it. But if it continues to be this distasteful for like another couple of hours or so, if I'm like 3-4 hours into it and it's still like it's still turning me off, I will just set it down. So we'll see what happens from here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jack, you can sneak around him real easy. He's not, his AI disengages pretty quick.
It actually
made me laugh. I was like,
he's got a bit of a short leash outside of that initial hallway where he bursts through.
Oh, that was funny. I was like, Kool-Aid man, yo, he's a Kool-Aid man. He's hilarious. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna go because I have a new game to talk about.
Go.
Oh. Okay. Oh. A couple of things, in front of that. Did some streaming here recently. Finished up Eternal Darkness after just way too much time playing that game. Man, there's some bullshit in that toward the end.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that last boss fight is enough to make me rip my hair out. I almost considered not going back to it. But,
He started laughing, guys. He started laughing.
What's that?
He started laughing.
Oh, I did start laughing. That's never a good sign.
It's a sign that Cole's mind is starting to decay and he's descending into madness. We need to get him out quick.
Yeah. Quick, pull the chain. Gotta yank him out of there. Yeah. Also streamed some Stardew Valley, which was fun. Got to show people my farm.
Yeah. I got to see some of that.
Yeah. Got to show people my monument to depression. Yeah, no, so I'm gonna try to do that more. I'm testing out doing like different streaming show kind of stuff. I call that one Gardening at Night after the REM song, you know, because you do it at night. See,
was that on Sunday? Did I miss that entirely?
That was like Saturday. I think it was Friday. It was after.
I think it was Friday. Too.
Yeah. Saturday, I streamed a couple of 8-bit games that people requested. And then also streamed some Lisa the Painful. Gonna wait to talk about that because I haven't seen enough of it. That's a side scrolling kind of adventure game RPG that has a real kind of like morbid and macabre sense of humor to it. I want to play a little bit more. It has like Earthbound style combat, but it's not random fights. It's like dudes that are standing in your way. And it's horror, like it definitely is upsetting because there is just a lot of weird, surreal, off-putting stuff, and it's in a terrible kind of situation.
But Cole,
yeah,
can't she live in Beverly Hill?
Yes, can't she live in Beverly Hill? Yeah, I streamed so those two 8-bit games that I streamed. Sorry to make this just like, hey, here's what you missed on these streams, but no, I'm not sorry. I should promote this shit. So, two people from Duckstream last year requested these games. And I decided I'm not gonna beat them because they're like 8-bit platformer style things. Kind of like they're both themed around like Japanese horror kind of stuff, like Japanese mythology. One is called Kensaden. It's a little bit like a imaginative like Castlevania or Shinobi 2 was themed after, you know, just regular Japanese Oni, and the last boss, you know, was fought at Nobunaga's palace kind of thing. It was fine, but it ended up being like really frustrating. As games from that era are, because if you got
knocked back,
yeah, if you got hit, it wasn't like a Ninja Gaiden or Castlevania thing where it would like throw you back horizontally and then you would just like land. No, if you were standing at the top of a staircase and something hit you, you would just like stagger backward, like whoa, 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 whoa. Like picture in a cartoon somebody like windmilling their arms trying to catch their balance, and it would just knock you all the way back into a platform you should not have been, or into a hole you should not have been knocked into.
Yeah, like gravity is for real, and you lost your balance, so off you go. Bye.
Yep. What a weird thing for this video game to model.
Right?
Yeah, and the other one was an NES game called Phantom Fighter, which is like it's almost like a fighting game where you're going into different little houses in these villages and fighting like Japanese or Chinese hopping vampires, these Kyonshi kind of things.
You had the Kyonshi quizzes were great.
Yeah. Asking like no-brainer questions about these zombies. Both of those are very strange, horror themed but not explicitly in the mission of the streams. I'm gonna wait to talk about Lisa until I do some more of that. Those are on the Duckfeed Twitch channel when we do those. Any questions about Stardew or those before I go on to the main entree?
I just want to shout out and say that you had a very impressive base in Stardew Valley.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
it was I've got the Junio huts or whatever those are with little dudes who harvest my crops, and
mm-hmm.
got lots of sheds with canning jars and kegs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Got to make that paper. Want to buy that clock. Want to buy that 10 million gold clock. Yeah. It's like getting the bike at the arcade with your tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So the other thing that I've been cheating on The Witcher 3 with is Super Mario Odyssey.
Hey! What's up?
Yeah! How about that?
Whee!
Ben, you say that like you also got this.
I have played it and beat it. Well,
what? It.
Yeah. Okay, we're probably going to have to tag team this.
Yeah.
We did.
This is what I did in Seattle, is we got this game, it came out, and we just sat around for 2 days and played it and beat it.
Nice.
It's awesome.
It
right?
is so good. Oh my gosh.
It's like such a good idea for a system where it's like we're gonna make this one single mechanic, but it'll have like infinite amount of extension in it. So yeah.
Yeah. So if people weren't paying attention to this, or they want like a small kind of summary, this is a 3D Mario game in the vein of like a Mario Galaxy, except without the planetoid kind of gimmick to it, or like Mario Sunshine, but without the water jet. Instead, what you're doing is you have this hat.
So it's a Mario game without anything special.
Au contraire, mon frère. The gimmick in this one is that you have a hat that is actually a ghost, okay? And the ghost can help you, Mario, possess different enemies that you throw it at.
It's not supposed to be spooky. It's supposed to be a happy game.
I'm pretty spooked.
Yeah. So. And so this is great, because what it lets you do is inhabit and, you know, like temporarily play as regular Mario enemies. Like Bullet Bills will be shooting at you, and you can possess them as they, you know, as they're coming at you, and then like use them to fly across these large spans. Or, you know, blow up things that you want to, you know, get away from. Like, possessing a Goomba lets you walk around on, like, uneven ground. Like, they don't slide around on ice or things. Chain Chomps, like, you do this crazy little, like, almost Angry Bird-style slingshot with them. Yeah. The opening stage just has these gigantic T-Rexes that you can inhabit. And you start just, like, pounding through the entire level at, like, you know, 100x Mario size, just blowing through obstacles you'd have to, like, climb all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not very far in this, you know. I'm gonna admit I'm just at the end of the desert zone kind of thing.
Yep.
But like, they use that very well for the boss fights. They use it it's so inventive and so fun and so light. I guess what I would say.
One of the things I was surprised by is how the mechanics of like his movement and like all the platforming mechanics, it's almost like copy paste from Mario 64.
Yeah.
Like pretty much the same moveset. There's a couple of exceptions, a couple of new things you can do, but I mean that works. Like mm-hmm. that it kind of speaks to how good that system is. But then on top of that, the hat mechanic is just like a lot of fun. I do like that anytime you possess someone, the identifying factor of you possessing them is that they'll have a mustache that still lets you know.
This mustache rides you.
Oh my.
comparing this to like Zelda Breath of the Wild, like whereas that is kind of like a completely new game that has a Zelda skin on it and it kind of works, like this is a Mario game. Like this is this is a core platformer game. It has solid inventive puzzles and stuff like that, but it does a good job of making a new mechanic that's completely different than any other game in the past, and it's completely open-ended, so it's like it constantly surprises you level by level. And on top of that, it's just a well-designed game. Like, it's a very satisfying playthrough. It's great.
Yeah. So
you
like
guys, you guys keep on saying new mechanic, and I have Kirby just sobbing in the corner.
I mean, like Kirby takes on the ability of whatever he absorbs. He doesn't become. He doesn't like take over the thing that he absorbs.
Yeah, tell that to Kirby's lawyer. He'll be hearing from.
Yeah. So, moving around is so fun. Like, you know, that's the test. You know, you go around and say, hey, if I run and then crouch, so I start sliding and then jump, does he go, woohoo? Like, yeah, he does. You know, it's the same thing that worked 20 years ago or 21 mm-hmm. years ago in Mario 64. It is still so fun to run around as this character. The structure mm-hmm. of it, I think, is really great, too, because you don't just have like a world select, you know, or like a mission select where you're going in and saying, hey, I want to go do this. Like you mm-hmm. go to the particular zone and it will like drop you into a mission or start you on a mission depending on like where you walk to or what you're starting on. So
yeah,
they fold the side quests and, you know, that kind of stuff where you're getting your different doodads to power up your ship, like just into the main quest as part of like the distraction kind of curve.
Yeah, like instead of there being 6 stars that you go for, there's like 30 smaller stars that you go for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just walk over into this corner and you say, oh, this looks like it'd be, oh, it totally is fun. And I also get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Also, this is a fucking gorgeous game.
Yes.
This looks so good.
The intensity of the colors is just like amped up to 11.
Yep. Yeah, on both the portable, this, you know, the Switch screen itself, and on the TV, it's mm-hmm. it's remarkable what they've done with that.
Yep.
Yeah. I am over the moon with this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it deserves all the good praises that it's been getting. Definitely a system seller. Yeah, it's great. I feel like it's even better than like Mario 64 in terms of like just being satisfying and constantly surprising, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
It is a you can tell this is a game that has been made with a bunch of just kind of like accumulated knowledge about the way these things should go.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is it's so respectful of the series as a whole. Like, it does a great job of like integrating past things into it, like respectfully. You know? Yeah.
Well, I love, so in Galaxy, the way that they worked in 2D sections was to confine you into the side of these like pill things, where it was still the 3D graphics, and you know, you're just kind of like walking around in a constricted phase, in a constricted space where like moving in or moving out wasn't allowed, so it's just left, right, up, and down. Here they pull a Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, and you like you go through a pipe and then you become part of like a mosaic or something that is painted onto the side of the wall, and it's an 8-bit Mario graphics.
Yes.
and it just plays with like regular Mario jump physics and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they limit the moveset, so it's back to the original Mario.
Yeah.
But then they do a great job of mixing it up. And it's like when you exit out the side of that thing or whatever, you come in the 3D world, but then you can have whatever's in the 2D world also follow you out. And then it's just, yeah, it's just so creative and it's just so well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way into it. I'm excited to play more of it when I am out from under the yoke of Witcher 3, which is not to make it sound like I don't like it. There's just a lot of it. And I really screwed
up. You have two really good games that you're playing right now. Yep. You poor guy.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's everything.
Okay.
Super Mario Odyssey, a very, very good game that you've probably heard a lot of good things about already. And if you had any interest in getting it, you probably already have it.
So I probably should have jumped in earlier, but I too have been playing a Mario game.
Oh,
which one?
No, it's been Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Oh. Also a very good game.
Also a very good game. We were like, do you remember how like players 2 through 4 can be star catchers?
Yeah.
And that you just point at the screen and you know, it lets you collect the stars for the main player. And we're like, you know, maybe Luke is old enough to appreciate this. He's super wicked not. Did not get it at all.
Like, why am I pointing this?
Yeah, he loved watching us play it, but was not did not grok.
Yeah, participating now.
Ability to participate. Anyway, so that's I thought that was the right place to throw that in.
Yeah. Huh.
Cool.
So Ben, it's natural since we tag teamed that to throw to you now. What have you been playing besides Super Mario Odyssey?
So besides that, I've also been playing a little bit of Zelda. Just in case anybody is not sold on the Switch yet, it is perfect if you're doing any sort of traveling at any point in time. If you're on a plane, it's great. You can just play it. It goes by quickly. Like, the system is a lot of fun. I beat Super Mario Odyssey on a train going to the airport next to a stranger.
Nice.
But it was amazing. Yeah, like, that's been a lot of fun. The Zelda game, it's good. I'm not 100% like happy with it. Like, it does feel very different from the typical Zelda franchise in a way that's like not like the Super Mario Odyssey. Like, it feels like different game completely, kind of. Mm-hmm. They've like, the thing that's like weird about it is they've gotten rid of some of the core mechanics that like you really love about the Zelda games. Like, there's not explicit temples anymore. It's kind of like they did a new way of doing the temples, which on the one hand, like, big ups to them for trying something new on a core system like that, because that's like super brave to do. But on the other hand, like, it's kind of like a bummer because the substitution is not as satisfying as the temples were. It's usually like not as deep as puzzles as the temples have.
Okay.
So that's a little bit disappointing. Another thing that's kind of disappointing about it is like, there's usually like the temples, there's a boss battle at the end of it. They don't necessarily scaffold you into that well. So sometimes you are playing it and you do not know the mechanic that you're supposed to know to beat the boss that you're fighting.
It's not not like, oh, the item that you picked up in this dungeon is what you need to use.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's just like, hey, there's this mechanic that we might have taught you at one point in time, but you need to use that now. But we're not going to telegraph this at any other point in time in the temple that you're in. And so that's a little bit disappointing. So I talked about it with other people because I had hidden at one of the quote-unquote like temples that I'm at now. I've gone to the boss battle, but like I have not found a way past it. And it's pretty difficult. And so I talked to other people about that, but they said that that is like typical and that that's a harder one. And so you have to kind of go grind elsewhere to come back to be able to face that one.
To get like a
you said the G word.
So grind, like do more shrines in order to get like hearts and endurance, or go get like a new item that'll help.
Well, I guess both, but mostly the first one. Yeah, be able to just have better endurance and health. That's a little bit disappointing. I mean, I know it's like a tough thing to design around, right? Because they're kind of shooting for the moon here, where they have this open world game where you're supposed to be able to approach any of these four things at any point in time and in any order and be able to do it, you know, I don't know, like be able to solve these puzzles like equally well. And that's really hard to design around, I think. But I don't know. So, I'm not it's not bad, but I think whereas like when that game came out and it got like 95 and hundreds like scores all around, I don't necessarily agree with that the same way that I would with Super Mario Odyssey.
God damn it, Ben. Why do you have to represent the dying of the hype?
Sorry. I mean, I like the fact that they made everything climbable. Like, I think that's really cool because that's like a interesting choice that I haven't seen in many other games. And like, that's a cool way to kind of make an open world.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely cool nooks in it. There's a couple of places that I discovered that I hadn't found before by just like wandering around the map. And so I do like the fact that it's kind of like similar to like a Skyrim approach where it's like, hey, we're going to put a bunch of like nuggets all around this map and we're going to reward you from just exploring blindly. Like, I like that aspect of it.
Nuggets.
They got some good nuggets in the game. but what I don't like is I don't like that the main story isn't really supported. I think there's not a way to go through like the main storyline and have you be appropriately prepared for the moments that you're going into, I think.
Right. It's designed for you to know exactly how much to wander.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know. It's kind of like a love-hate relationship with that game. So.
I wonder if I would like even bother with the main story, because that's my chronic problem with any open world game, is that at some point I just stop messing with the story entirely and the mini quests and all the other shit. And I just like wander around and do whatever is interesting to me. So yeah. I wonder if I would even have that problem, because I like to wander and that does not grinding to me, because I'm inventing things to do. So like, you know, it's a little bit different than, you know, rote same type of battle that you're doing over and over again type of thing. Cause I'm, you know, tasking myself with some great epic mission or whatever.
I will say there's a little bit of an asterisk on it being an open world, because some of the areas are just straight up like gated, because like you can't go there because it's like too hot or too cold or covered in fog or something like that. And there's like some like kind of environmental reason where you need to get a certain set of items in order to be okay in that environment. There's like a little bit of gating that they do. It's not it's not overly much, but it is there.
It's not like critical path gating is in the experience that I had. It's like, oh, you need to figure out how to solve this particular problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, then there's also meat gating as well. Like they just put stuff that will kill you in one shot in places to say this is high level.
Yep.
Yeah. Meat gates and nuggets. That's what I learned today.
Just listening for keywords. God, that's funny. Huh. Anything else, Ben?
I have a third game, but I haven't played it enough to talk about it, so we'll talk about it later.
Understood.
What will you be talking about in future weeks? Give us a name.
I don't want to yet.
Oh,
surprise!
Nice. Ooh.
This will be the cliffhanger.
It can't be because we still have Dennis.
Well, this will be my cliffhanger.
Okay. All
right. Your own personal cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Dennis.
Yeah. I've got two things to talk about this week, and the first one is a board game.
Okay.
So we went to see some friends over the weekend, and they had a game called Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle.
Okay.
Which it sounds on the surface like it would be a really crappy, like, licensed game that's no good, but it was actually a lot of fun. So at its core, it's a deck-building game.
Okay.
And it plays out across all seven of the books.
Oh, Jesus.
And basically you open the first book, quote unquote, which is just a deck of cards. And you play and beat with that. Then you open the second book and add it to the first book and play and beat that. And it kind of, the game, there are new mechanics that are introduced with each book. And it's really interesting because the game starts out fairly simple and easy to pick up and learn. And then we got as far as the fifth book. By the fifth book, it's really complicated. There's a lot going on. And so just having the game play out that way is a very elegant way to scale up the difficulty as you go.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's the objective?
The objective is to defeat each of the enemies. So when I say it's a deck of cards, it's actually a couple of decks of cards. There's a deck of bad things that happen at the start of your turn. There's a deck of villains, and then there's a deck for each of the heroes. And that's the other thing I should say. This is a game that speaks to my heart because it is a co-op, four-player game.
Yay!
And it's a deck-building game, so like all the better. Like these are all of my my.
These are like your bingo cards. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you play as one person is Harry, one person is Ron, one person is Hermione, and one person is Neville Longbottom. So I got that role, but each of the characters has a unique starting hand of cards or starting deck of cards that they draw from. And each turn you get a chance to buy cards to add to your deck. Now, if you buy it, that means someone else can't buy it. And so there's a little bit of communication and strategy there with, oh, hey, that ally will be really powerful for me. So even though you could buy it right now and put it in your deck, wait until it comes around to me and I have something that will double its effect or, you know, that sort of thing. And so you kind of go around each person. You start off the turn by drawing a bad thing that happens. Then you kind of play your cards, trying to defeat the villains that are on the board. And then once you get through all the villains, you win that book. But when the next book opens, the villains that you beat and these new villains are shuffled in. And each villain has a persistent effect that kind of changes the way that you have to play. So, for example, the Basilisk is a villain from the second book. And when that one gets turned up, you're not allowed to draw extra cards until it's defeated. Or another villain might have you lose health. Each hero has their own personal health pool. Another villain might have you lose health every time you discard a card or something like that. And so the game is constantly changing, both because the villain that you're facing at that moment is different, and so the rules are slightly different. But then because as you add to your deck, you're kind of trying to get different things out of your deck. At playing as Neville, I eventually got a bonus that allowed me to basically my healing abilities were better than other people's. So I kind of focused on buying cards that had to do with healing, whereas, the Ron character bought cards that focused on, leveraging your allies. And Harry Potter bought cards that focused on attack. And it's not immediately obvious like which card should be bought by which player, because every player needs to be able to heal, every player needs to be able to attack, etc. So there's a bit of opportunisticness of like, okay, I need something that can deal damage, so I'm going to buy this even though I'm not the attacked character. But there is also some specialization where if you play to your strength, you guys will do better than otherwise. A ton of fun, and it was really exciting because the people we were playing with had only gotten as far as the third book, and so they had held true. They hadn't peeked ahead, they hadn't looked at the future books, and so when we got to book four and book five, it was truly a surprise, like what was coming.
I mean, it has to be apparent who's going to be the villains of those of you who know the series, right?
You would know which villains are probably coming, but you wouldn't know what effects on the game they would have.
Okay.
So, like, I could probably guess, like, oh, in book five, Peter Pettigrew is going to be a bad guy. But I don't know what his ability is. And I'm trying to remember right now. It's got something to do with, he buffs other people. But the game each book changes. Like I said, there are new villains that come out. There's new abilities that, you know, go into your decks. But like at one point there were just dice in one of the books, and that was a really interesting surprise. Because like, okay, now there's a dice rolling element to this, and like that it was just really cool. Or eventually, like in one of the books, you start setting out more villains. So instead of having to fight one villain at once, you have to fight two at once, mm-hmm. which kind of makes sense because you are getting these more powerful abilities as you go. And so it's this constant kind of, you're constantly learning new rules, and you're having to figure out, okay, with this new set of rules, what's my role? What's the best way to succeed against the villains, A, that I know are coming, which, you know, we've kind of dealt with before, but then these new ones that I haven't really figured out how they interact together. So it was a ton of fun, really cool. And, you know, and when I saw it, I initially was like, oh, it's a licensed game. How good could this be? But a really fun experience, a co-op board gaming experience, which is hard to find, and a really fun and it felt at least balanced one at that. We stayed up like really late into the night playing and like barely lost book five. Right at the end, we couldn't quite, you know, finish it out. We're like, okay, should we go again? No, we're falling asleep.
Is it built in to where you could start up at book five, you know, and still yep. have like some kind of state? Okay.
Yeah, you could very easily just start from book five. Now, the one problem would be that if you hadn't played the previous books, it would be a pretty big set of rules to internalize off the bat.
Right, right. But like if you and these people got together in the next week, you would be able to sit down and say, okay, you know, where were we?
Yeah. Then? And I think that's what we would do. If we sat down to play again, we would start from book five versus starting completely over. Although I'm sure there are purists that are like, no, we're going to finish this all in one sitting. We probably spent 3 hours playing, and you know, there were interruptions, but 3 hours playing and only got through book five. So it's definitely a game that is meant for like a more extended game night or to be played over multiple nights.
Yeah.
So prepare yourself for that. But yeah, it was a really cool experience.
Neat.
Mm-hmm. So that's Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, which even within a generic licensed name, I feel like they've made it a very generic licensed name.
Yeah.
But well, what can you do?
Yeah, they were playing against a stack deck, and they decided to call it that.
Yeah, there's so many Harry Potter book names that just nothing else was available.
Yeah. every combination of words is used.
Yeah. Right. So that's the board game that I've been playing. The video game that I've been playing is Infamous Second Son.
Oh yeah, that was free on PS Plus here recently, right?
It was. So that's where I got it. I think it was either a launch title or a near launch title for PlayStation 4. So it definitely has the rough edges of they felt like they needed to use every single gimmick. But the like graphical quality of the game has held up pretty well. It still looks really good. It runs really smoothly and is fun to play. I'm not that familiar with the Infamous universe. I feel like we need David on the show here because I know he's played mm-hmm. the previous games and knows them a little bit better. But essentially, you know, it's the game world that this is set in. There are certain people called conduits who get special powers. But they've been deemed bioterrorists by the government and have been contained and imprisoned in a very nefarious way.
Yeah, like you get powers based on different elements. And so you mm-hmm. like they're essentially they set up like a superhero registry.
Yeah, basically. Only with the express purpose of we need to eradicate or imprison these people. So not good for the conduits. You play this kind of fuck up younger brother, second son, right? Who is kind of living in the shadow of his older brother, who's a little bit more responsible, a little bit more popular. It's set in Seattle, and it's a tribe of Indians or Native Americans, sorry, out there, and I forget the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll say is I was very disappointed at how quickly that relationship went into the backseat. So the opening hour of the game has a lot of really promising and really interesting play between the main character and his older brother. And you kind of intuitively get their roles together, their history together, and there's a lot of natural conflict that stems out of that, which is great. However, very quickly, your older brother gets thrown into the role of voice on the comms assigning you missions. And that relationship stalls out, and it's kind of nothing more than flavor, you know, bantering back and forth as they assign missions. So maybe I just haven't gotten far enough in the game to really mine that, but it started off really compelling, and then it felt like it fizzled. We'll see if they do anything with that.
No. Now, that's a shame, because you don't really see games that dive that deep into that, you know?
Yeah, like, there's like a brother, A Tale of Two Sons, I think.
Right.
That's a game that was excellent.
Oh, yeah, so that's specifically about that. But like in a big space where you have, you know, the ability to tell like a cinematic story, like Brothers was told entirely through gameplay. Like you could see them like really taking a shot with that, but yeah, it sounds like they just backseat the one without superpowers when that could actually be interesting.
Yeah, and you know, it's named Second Son, right? Like it can't be that simple. So I'm hopeful that maybe there's something around the corner, but it feels like they showed there was promise and then they shelved it to too much of an extent too early. Yeah. But none of that is relevant to how the game plays, which is pretty fun. So your thing then in this world of conduits is you are a conduit power absorber. I mean, I'm not sure they've really given it a name yet at this point in the story. But basically, when he touches another conduit, he doesn't have any powers to start with, but he touches a conduit and gains their powers.
It's like Rogue from X-Men.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, touches another conduit, gains their powers. And so that's kind of the way you level up then and get new abilities throughout the game is you find other conduits, touch them, and take their powers. And so at this point, I've got two sets. I've got smoke-based, which is really cool. You can dash through chain-link fence. You can travel through air vents and all this stuff. And then you've got neon-based, which is essentially you're a laser person.
Right. They made a game entirely about entirely about the neon one. Neon,
yes.
Like First Light or whatever it was.
First Light, or I was going to say Dying Light, but that's the horror game. Yeah, something like that. So those powers, they did a great job taking a step to the left of your conventional superpowers. Like you don't just have fire person, you know, the main villain has concrete control, which is done in an interesting way, like stone shape essentially. And that's pretty cool. So it's neat to see those things kind of imagined and played out. Although between neon and smoke, like whichever set of powers you're using, you can't switch between them at will. You have to find a source. So you find smoke, absorb it, now you have that power. Or you stand next to a neon sign, absorb it, now you have that power. The fact that you can't just switch at will means that they do have to kind of bake in certain abilities into every power set.
Right.
So like whether you're neon or smoke, you have a way to lob a bomb that will stun enemies. Or you have a way to launch a high power missile that will kill people, et cetera, et cetera.
That just seems smart.
Yeah, so it does a significant amount to smooth over gameplay, but it does make them feel a bit more samey. But Infamous shines when you are truly willing to be Infamous. So the big thing of the series is there's a karma meter, and you can be either good, which is, I forget what that's like, Paragon or Protector or whatever, and then the bad side is Infamous. And the bad side is when you just don't bother with not killing people. You don't bother with protecting civilians. You just go in and rampage and wreck shop to get your objectives done and don't care about anyone who gets in your way. That, I think, is where the combat and the powers really shine and are fun to play because you stop engaging with enemies as individuals and you're more fighting this kind of group of enemies that are the same size as you, but are just so much smaller in terms of power that you're just kind of wiping through them. That feels great. That works well, especially with the smoke power, which you can dash into a vent and literally show up, you know, three stories above yourself in an instant. it really lends itself to that kind of, you dash in, wreck a bunch of people, knock something over, and then dash out, and suddenly you're looming above them, looking down on the carnage you just wreaked. That's awesome.
I just like the idea of, like, oh, smoke power. What happens? You turn into smoke, somebody inhales you, and you, like, your powers, you just make them really sick.
You kill them in 40 years. Yeah.
You literally can throw a little bomb that makes them, you know, cough. And there you can have good karma by their coughing so hard that it's easy to walk up and subdue them.
Okay. Which
is essentially you pin them to the ground. And that's technically what you're supposed to be doing if you're a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to maintain good karma. Is instead of just wantonly killing people, you are subduing them. You're taking care to aim your shots to hit their legs, which pins them, instead of just shooting for body shots, which is easier, but will kill them. And that just slows things down. So I'm trying. I really am, guys. I'm trying to be...
So if you decide to go whole hog on, you know, like just being a rough and tumble rude dude, let's say, does the game change to match that and rise to it? Because like what it sounds like is, oh, you can either try to be like really careful and dainty about this and make it hard for yourself, or you can just do the crazy button mash thing. Do they give you different powers? Do the enemies get equipped differently? Okay.
You get different powers. And theoretically, if I stick with being good long enough, I'll get powers that make it easier to be good. Mm-hmm. So like my stun bomb will now automatically subdue the people it stuns or stuff like that. But right now, maybe it's just because I'm in the awkward beginning place or maybe this is truly a flaw. It feels like I'm being good at the cost of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not
which,
good.
You know, I'm fine if you want to have a morality system in your game, whatever. That's, you know, that's fine. Make it fun. And it feels like the way to make it fun right now is to ignore the morality system and be bad.
Right.
Which is maybe a little realistic, but it ultimately not satisfying. Especially because you kind of, I chose, hey, I'll try to go good early on. And like the first big decision, you know, there are big decision points where you can choose the good one or the bad one. And I chose the good one. But that gives you points towards being good. And that, you know, you choose your unlocks. They're good and bad unlocks that you can only get if you are a certain level of good or bad. Mm-hmm. And so now that I've got a couple points into goodness, essentially, like it would be a big nerf to swing myself back over to bad. I don't know how long that would take, but that's a little bit frustrating.
Mm.
To feel like I'm one, that they've made it less fun, and then two, that I'm pigeonholed into it. And I imagine the majority of people who play the game would be pigeonholed into it.
Yeah.
Because that's, you just start out the good guy, right? Do the good thing.
Hmm.
So love the characters. I wish they kind of gave the relationships between them more room to breathe. Love the combat, but I wish being good was more fun.
Yeah.
And I'll keep you guys updated as I play.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of this in comparison to like Knights of the Old Republic, where they had like the good bad combat system, and like the good, you just get a payoff of like, I didn't murder these civilians. Like, I guess I'm a better person. Is it similar to that, or
very much so? Yeah. Okay. So there's you'll get a karma streak. And I'm not sure if I have the bad karma available to me right now. I think I've only got the good one, but if I subdue a certain number of people in a row without killing anyone, I'll have a super powerful move that becomes available to me. So right now I think it's like 5 in a row or 7 in a row or something.
Okay.
I bet you I'll be able to upgrade it, so it's easier to get.
Yeah.
But that kind of plays into the fact that as this super powerful human, it's kind of easy to kill someone accidentally. Like, you know, you're in the heat of things, you're firing away, and it's like, oh, well, I just collapsed that walkway onto a civilian. Whoops. which, again, may be realistic, not necessarily fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Huh.
So I almost, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if I, because I the saving, you can have, you know, different saves on it. So maybe I'll just try like a, you know, an hour of just being bad and see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And if I can swing back that direction, maybe I'll just go that route and say, screw it. I'll take the bad thing. It feels like the writers definitely assumed you would do the good thing, but I haven't tested it. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did the same thing on Knights too, where it's like you have a good run through and a bad run through or whatever, and you just right, go whole hog. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I want to hear more about it.
Infamous Second Son. Yeah.
Infamous Second Son. Well, that sounds like an episode to me. Any objections to buttoning it up?
I object.
Buttons. Okay. No, buttons.
Nope.
Buttons.
Overrule. The credit. Oh, thank you, everybody, for tuning in, for downloading, for streaming, whatever you're doing to listen to this Level 219. We really appreciate it. Want to remind you that Duckstream is coming up on, let's see here, December the 8th, 9th, 10th. Yes, there we go. The weekend of the starting Friday the 8th, rather, of December. That is a big streaming event that we do to support the Transactive Gender Center out of Portland, Oregon. It's a big deal every year, 48 hours of straight streaming. Mark your calendar. No specific schedule or details yet, but it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the usual things, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Consider going to duckfeed.tv/tipjar to do your Amazon purchases. That's an affiliate link that we use that helps out. It's a way to support the network without spending extra money. And of course, please tell your friends if they like podcasts, if they like video games, if they like both a little bit, they might like us. Not if they like both a lot, then it might be a little bit too much. So, I think that is everything, unless I'm forgetting something.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm always Jellichon in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, let's see. Jala, what do you have?
I have Tell the Tale of Telltale, Behold a Tale of Woe. That's very long.
Okay.
You can chop that up however you want to. We're not. Whatever.
I vote not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome as one big chunk.
TTTOTTBTTOW.
Yep.
Okay, well, anyway. So, Stardew Hole. Managing Orc Structure. This Mustache Rides You.
Oh, no. Okay.
And Meat Gates and Nuggets.
I like that one.
Okay. Ben?
The only one I got is Monument to Depression.
Okay.
Oh, goodness.
Dennis?
I wrote it down, Managing the Orc Chart.
Okay.
But yeah, that's in the same vein as what Jala said. Yes. I had Horse Leg, which I'm not sure. I think that's a paraphrase.
Horse Leg. No, versus... that was because I was talking about the Resident Evil Beholder thingy.
Yeah, the Horse Leg Beholder.
I said it was a deer leg because I don't know what the hell it was. And
there
I just arbitrarily said it was a deer. And then Cole's like, no, that's a horse. Yep. I'm like, okay. Well,
you see the other horse parts later.
So okay. Horse leg versus deer leg then.
Yeah.
I have Oops All Grandmas. And then The Dying of the Hype.
Okay. And I only have one, You Mail in the Butts. And that was related to the Camel Cash comment about the rewards. So we have one that has two votes, Managing the Orc Chart. I don't know that I want to give that one away because how thoroughly that undid you, Dennis.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be a special treasure for people to find.
Yeah. They'd be very happy. Yeah, that's fine. We can save that.
Yeah.
The rest of it is a pretty diverse cast.
It is, yeah. So ones that got laughs, Meat Gates and Nuggets, Monument to Depression, and You Mail in the Butts.
A Monument to Depression is pretty on the nose, so I'd say deprioritize that one.
Okay. Meat Gates and Nuggets?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan of those.
Cool.
We're a fan of Meat Gates and Nuggets.
All right.
We like nuggets. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to go and get this edited up so I can go to sleep and go to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
That have a good night, like guys. A good thing.
Yeah. All right. Take care. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for editing.
Yeah.
Have a good week, guys.
You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.